You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Space Floor NBA Podcast. My name is Connor Gielen.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
This is our 26th official episode. Today, we're going to be talking basically about the NBA as a whole. We're going to give our thoughts on teams like the Lakers and the Celtics and why they suck right now.
Why they've been a little bit disappointing so far this season. So let's start off with the Lakers. And as I'm sure many of you guys have heard, LeBron claims to have sort of turned on his like playoff mode or playoff mentality a little bit earlier this season. Sorry?
Zero Dark 30.
What's that?
And that's what he called it.
All right. I didn't even know that.
Really?
But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a thing.
All right. But that's sort of, so I guess his Zero Dark 30 is basically what he's saying is, like, he needs to make a push to get the Lakers back in the playoffs because right now they're, like, the 10th seed.
What are your thoughts about this?
I'm a little bit surprised, to be honest, that it's still a question of, like, whether the Lakers are going to make the playoffs. Because to me, it was like the Lakers were a lock for the playoffs. It was just that, like, how far are they going to make the playoffs? Are they going to lose in the first round or the second? Like, that was more of what it was like for me.
For me, I was more talking about the actual comment. Like, it seems so LeBron Jamesy because, like,
LeBron James. What do you mean by that? Yeah.
Because it's him coming out and being like, okay, now I'm really going to try. And if they make the playoffs, it's all because LeBron went ham and he is just amazing. And if they miss the playoffs, it's because, even LeBron trying really hard, they couldn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, because I guess sort of like he's making an excuse of like,
especially like if they make the playoffs now, it's just like LeBron saying, give me credit,
which he deserves.
I don't think you really need.
But like, yeah, making the playoffs shouldn't be that much of an accomplishment if you're one of the best players of all time.
No, I mean the Lakers team isn't that
good.
Fair enough. But still, I would just say like, if I was Kyle Kuzma, or if I was Lonzo Ball, and I heard this comment, I would be thinking back to like a few of the games where it was a really close fourth quarter, and I'd be like, were you not going 100% then?
Yeah, you mean like were you not going 100% before this point?
Like, yeah, like everyone knows LeBron wasn't going 100% because he's like 33, 34 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like to come out and say that, just kind of like, yeah, it makes you wonder as a teammate, like, are you giving everything you have for this team or are you just waiting to trade us so you can start trying?
I just think more it means, like I understand that. I don't think that it means like he wasn't going all out in the fourth quarter of a tight game. I think it just means like, in every single game in the playoffs, LeBron James is giving it his all, his 100%, and he's going to go out and try to average 35 for a series and lead his team in every statistical category. Like, in that kind of LeBron James that we see, like, in the finals, isn't the same LeBron James that we see throughout the regular season, I don't think, especially on the defensive end. I think that's more what he's referring to, but at the same time, like...
Okay, but that being said, like, he still is pretty horrible on defense right now. Like,
there are
clips going viral of LeBron James just not closing out whatsoever.
I wasn't actually watching necessarily in those specific games when that was happening live, but to me it sort of looked like in those games it was like more of a miscommunication than like him not hustling or something.
Really?
Like, to me it just looked like someone left the guy wide open and then LeBron was like, LeBron's just standing under the basket. Like, okay, why is he open?
I don't know. I remember I was watching the Bucks game last night, which I do want to get to, when the Lakers played the Bucks, and it was after the Lakers kind of just threw the game away. So the game was pretty much over. But Eric Bledsoe got a wide open three, and LeBron was supposed to shift onto him, and he just didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, man. Like you're just like putting salt in the wound there. Like, you're supposed to be the leader.
And in the finals, that's a play that LeBron makes.
But... Oh, okay, but like you should still try in it, especially when you like you need to make the playoffs, and it's not a guarantee that you're going to make the playoffs.
That's more of my point.
And you're like, the 9 seed.
That's more of my point. Is like, is he even really turned? Has he even really changed anything? Like he said that, but like to your point of, he's saying it so that he gets more credit, or he's saying it to be sort of like a diva, I guess. Like,
or just
has he even really changed anything?
Just to draw attention. Like, okay, just do it. Like, why do you need to like announce? Like, there's been this whole criticism of like LeBron needs to have like all this spotlight on him. And personally, I don't really get bothered by it, but it's true in the sense that like the way he went to Miami, this whole Zero Dark 30 thing every season where it's like, okay, now I'm going to become like this big hero, get really dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, it's kind of annoying when he's not a number one seed in the conference, because like, we're just appreciating greatness when it happens and we just like see past those things. But we're just like, dude, come on, you're the ninth seed. Like, beat the Kings before you start talking about this stuff, you know?
I mean, that's fair. And what I want to say is like, say they don't make the playoffs.
That'd be wild.
First of all, that's crazy. Like, the LeBron breaking his 8-year streak or whatever of making the finals because he didn't make the playoffs.
And then are haters right saying that he was in the easy Eastern Conference?
I think that you could also say this is probably the worst team he's been on since, you know, that streak started. Maybe even, is this team worse than the Cavs teams from when?
I don't think so.
Early in his career?
Like 07?
Yeah.
I don't really think so.
Yeah, probably comparable. Crazy. Probably comparable. But say they don't make the playoffs. I want to talk about, how does that affect the locker room? How does that affect free agency?
How does that affect the GM trading for Anthony Davis?
And do you blame LeBron himself for them not making the playoffs, or like his injury?
I can never blame LeBron James for his team not making the playoffs, because like, he's still...
So he has zero blame for that? Or just not 100% blame?
Because he's still playing like a top three player in the world, right?
Like, of course, he's still the best player in the world.
I'm saying he's the best player in the world, but this season, he's not playing like the best player.
Yeah.
Like, I would say that award goes to like Giannis or Harden.
Yeah. But,
like, or like KD. I'm just saying, like, in terms of like pure skill, like LeBron's the best player in the world, but like, he didn't perform to that this season. But you can't blame a guy who's playing like a top three player when he plays like a top three player and they still don't make the playoffs. Like, he can't do much better than that, and you can't just, yeah, just my opinion, where you can't blame the guy on the best guy on the team because he played like the best guy on the team. Just
so,
have someone else step up.
I agree. I think that it's, if they don't make the playoffs, you have to look back at like those 10 or so games where LeBron didn't play and be like, okay, if he had played, maybe you win a couple extra, maybe that's the difference, you know, if it's really close. But I still think there's a pretty good chance that this team makes the playoffs. I think it's a little bit. I think that
there's like 3-1 betting odds that you don't make the play, that they don't make the playoffs, which I found pretty like.
I feel like
a wake up call.
I'm not gonna go out and like guarantee that the Lakers make the playoffs. There's a very solid chance they don't, which would be, like we already said, like that would be crazy. But I think it's too early to count LeBron out, because this team's still 30-32, and like, that's not very good, right? And that's 62 out of 82 games through the season. But if you look at the standings, like, the Spurs are 34-29 right now, but they're 3-7 their last 10. So there's, who's to say that like, they won't continue to fall? And they're the eighth seed, right? So,
but like, also, who's to say that that's just like a low streak? And before that, they were like what are they now? They're like 2 games ahead of the Lakers. But before that, they were like 5. So,
yeah, before that streak, they would have been 31-22.
Yeah. So I think they would have had a greater gap, and like, maybe that's just like a cold streak. So I would say that like helps the Spurs and doesn't help the Lakers.
Yeah, but like, if the Lakers really, if LeBron is really going his whole 100% now, if he's really willing to commit to this season making the playoffs, because to be honest, like, before the season, I was like, okay, it doesn't... To be honest, like, even right now, it doesn't even really matter if the Lakers make the playoffs this season.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Because, like, they're not going to get anywhere in the playoffs. And we already know this team is going to come back, and they're going to make some big move over the offseason, and they're going to be looking to go much deeper into the playoffs next season. But at the same time, like, I still do think that it's at least important for LeBron to try to make an effort just to show, like, you don't want to inspire a feeling of like losing, even with the best player in the world. You don't want to have that losing atmosphere in that locker room of young guys. And I think even in free agency, I feel like it's going to be harder than to draw away someone like Klay Thompson or Jimmy Butler or Kyrie Irving, which we'll get to the Celtics, but like with the recent rumors of like LeBron and Kyrie forgiving each other and whatever, and maybe even like Kevin Durant, like who knows? Kawhi Leonard. Those guys are a lot less likely, I think, to come to the Lakers if they're not 100% certain that LeBron can still give his 100% effort and play hard on both sides of the ball. And if this team doesn't even make the playoffs, then are you thinking as one of those players, like, how much of a difference can I make that, like, they're going to go from not making the playoffs to winning the finals? Like,
you're saying it's if they don't make any moves?
I'm saying if they don't make the playoffs this year, and someone like Jimmy Butler is looking at the Lakers, and he thinks, okay, this team didn't make the playoffs last year, and I want to win the finals, am I enough to make that huge jump?
I think players have so much respect for LeBron James
that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that it doesn't really matter.
Okay, I think that's fair. I'm just sort of trying to think, like, how much does the playoffs really matter this year? Because to be honest, they're not going to do anything if they're actually in the playoffs. So it's more just like, what are the ripple effects, I guess, if they don't?
If they don't make the playoffs, does Luke Walton get fired?
He might. Like, honestly, we have no idea what's going on in the Lakers front office with Magic. And I'm sure that everything's not great. And no, not everybody's happy, but especially after the Anthony Davis situation. Even the young guys, and the whole locker room's got to be kind of a mess after the whole Anthony Davis rumors.
But I don't think Luke Walton is a bad coach, though. Like, I think he's a pretty solid players coach and a pretty solid X's and O's guy. But then again, like, the pressure with this Lakers organization, yeah. I don't know if the Lakers front office can justify keeping him in there after the season that they've just had.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I also don't think, I don't know if you can blame Luke. I don't think you can blame Luke Walton really for this season. Once again, I think it goes back to LeBron's injury and the players that he's given. Like, around LeBron, he doesn't have that much talent to contribute right now.
Dude, okay, I just want to take a time out to say, you good? Say, Brandon Ingram's jump shot is, like, broke. I did not realize that until last night. Like, I thought Brandon Ingram was, like, this good complimentary piece. But then I just watched last night, and it seemed so awkward.
This season we thought Brandon Ingram could be like a 20-point scorer and a second option next to LeBron.
I think he needs to get traded. Like, there's no doubt in my mind.
He probably does need a change of scenery, because it's got to hurt your self-confidence.
The Lakers need to get rid of him.
The Lakers need to get rid of him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for all these players, like, it's got to hurt your self-confidence. Like, even beyond Brandon Ingram, like, at any moment, like, this team was ready to trade you for Anthony Davis, you know? Like, this is the team that drafted you. This is the team that, like, believed in you, especially if they're, like, Kyle Kuzma, and they drafted you, like, in the second round.
Yeah.
You know, this is the team that bought into you, and now they're willing to just give you away. And
by the way, this could affect how you look at LeBron James, because then all of a sudden, you guys had this little thing going where you didn't win that many games last year, but still, I think, like, there was a pretty decent culture in the Lakers locker room. And then this guy who like brings the entire media to your locker room, and he just kind of shakes things up, and now all of a sudden you all have to be really good or get traded. There could be some tension with guys like Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, and LeBron.
Yeah. I think they have too much respect for LeBron to even really like face him with that.
I guess.
But they did behind grow, his
they,
back
they,
like,
they grew up watching him.
For sure. So. But behind his back there could definitely be some of that animosity, I guess. Like he came in and tried to turn a young core that was working pretty well to his team, I guess, and like tried to
sort of. And I don't want to say that like they were like the next big thing, right? Because like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have like kinda underperformed for where they were drafted. And, like, I don't think any of these dudes, like, were said to be a top, like, 15 player in the league. And they weren't, like, winning games. But they still had, like, four young dudes who were quality players.
By the way, shout out to D'Angelo Russell for proving Magic wrong.
My man is going to get a max contract.
Yeah. And D'Angelo Russell's having a heck of a season. And basically,
what if the Lakers, if you remember, did like, not trade
him? They kind of just gave him up because they're like, Lonzo our future Ball. Point guard is Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo Ball.
To be fair, Lonzo Ball has missed, you know, like the last like 10 games or something.
And by the way, they're like,
and they're much better with Lonzo on the
like,
court.
Insane, like, insane. He missed like 15 games or something, and they're like, yeah. They have like a 33% win rating or whatever.
I don't know what you mean.
Win percentage. Though.
A 1%. Like, so they're winning 33% of the games without one. Yeah, okay.
I said that's so all right. Weird.
all right. Do you think... Let's move on to the Celtics.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
They also suck.
Yeah. All right. I don't think it's fair to say that they suck quite to the same extent as the Lakers, because the Celtics are still, like,
they're the fifth
seed.
They're
yeah.
the fifth seed. But then again, there are five good teams in the East.
Yeah, and they and have one of 10 them is fewer the wins.
Without Victor Oladipo.
This team is, like... This team's 4-6 in their last 10. The Pacers without Victor Oladipo are 7-3 in their last 10. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
but
how
like,
does that happen? No, just because like Nate McMillan is like high key the third best, not the third best coach, but like the third most deserving of Coach of the Year
behind Budenholzer and Mike Malone.
Yeah, he's like doing a fantastic job with this team.
Yeah,
and like I was thinking about this last night. I wouldn't be able to kind of justify giving it to him over the other two guys, just because, like, the other two guys have one seeds.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Nate McMillan's becoming one of my favorite coaches, which is, like, a really nerdy which is a really nerdy sentence. But, like, I don't know. He's just,
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, he's doing a really good job, and they're, like, the Spurs of the East, which is why I guess it makes sense that they're ahead of the Celtics, because they just have, like, five dudes averaging in the teens for points per game, and it's just really working. So you have them, you have the Bucks, who are just having everything's clicking this season. Raptors, bench, talent, offense, defense, threes, they got everything. And then 76ers have maybe the best starting lineup in the NBA, behind maybe the Warriors.
Yeah.
So like those four teams, especially like the three besides the Pacers, sound better than the Celtics sound. Like,
one, do you think that the like, all those three teams, the Bucks, Raptors, and Sixers, are going to be very are serious threats in the playoffs? And we know that they're going to be serious opposition for the Celtics, who we thought had a lock on the Eastern Conference Finals. I think or had a lock.
Is that
on
a question?
On the Eastern Conference Finals? Yeah. No. I'm saying like Bucks, Raptors, Sixers. Like we know how good they are. But the Pacers, do you think they're going to be able to keep that up? Like they're keep up their play. So far in the playoffs?
For the next 20 games, I have to say, like, maybe. Just because like, they're three games ahead of the Celtics. I don't know. Like, if the Celtics just turn it on like that, then I think the Celtics could just suddenly just go on a run, and the Sixers would go on a run, and maybe the Pacers just kind of... The injury of Victor Oladipo just kind of catches up to them. But I would say the Pacers are going to, like, catch, like, the Nets or, like, the Magic... Which is crazy that the Magic are going to make the playoffs. Or the Pistons in the second round. And I can see like a Victor Oladipo-less Pacers get to the second round of the playoffs where LeBron James like doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
which would be
that's crazy.
Kind of hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. I'm not totally convinced. Like, as well as this Pacers team has played even without Victor Oladipo, I'm not totally convinced that that team really even compares, like, if you throw at them like the star power of the Bucks, Raptors, Sixers, and Celtics in the playoffs.
Yeah, because
like I'm just not sure they can hold their own.
I don't think
as good as they've
been. I don't think they'll be a threat to any of those three teams.
Three teams or four?
Four.
Okay. Yeah, that was sort of my question. So you think that the Celtics, like, if they were to go up against the Pacers, like,
they would
win that series?
Yeah, just because like they have better players,
even with the way that they're playing right now.
Yeah, because like you just. Like ISO Kyrie Irving or Al Horford pick and roll,
and who's stopping
just for like 48 minutes a game. And I think if the Celtics have like seven games to game plan for one specific team, especially if that team is kind of basing their game off of just kind of like outsmarting their opponents and just playing well, then I think the Celtics can. The playoffs are more favorable to the Celtics in the regular season, because I think the playoffs they can like kind of just get their stuff together and just focus on one team for 2 weeks and just kind of get the job done.
All right. Let's talk about sort of why do you think the Celtics are struggling? Why do you think that it is that, like, they're just not playing as well as we thought they would?
Okay, low-key, I said this, like, kind of as a joke to, like, my friend. It's almost true that the Celtics are kind of better without Kyrie Irving. And then I saw...
Are you a believer in that?
Yeah.
That is that assessment.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Just okay. I had a statistic. I'll try to bring it up.
Yeah.
But just like they just like I'm not saying like the ball moves like kind of a bit better, especially if you like putting Gordon Hayward in there.
Yeah.
The ball just kind of moves a bit better in the Celtics
when Kyrie's not on the court.
Yeah. Which I think is notable, and also they just win more games when Kyrie Irving is out than when he's in. I mean, it's a small sample size, but still.
I think the problem isn't that they're worse when with Kyrie in the court. I think the problem is that they've got too many shot creators. So I think what you're seeing is like when Kyrie's not on the court, you're seeing sort of a result of with one fewer guy who can create his own shot. There's that many more touches and that much more opportunity for other guys to get involved. And so what I think is more, I don't think it's so much that you need Kyrie Irving to be out, but you need somebody like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward. Like you need one of those guys to be off the court sometimes for the ball to really move as well as it should. Because it's almost like you've got like seven guys on this team who are like, can put up like consistently double-digit points and create their own shot. Maybe even like eight. Like even guys like the Morris brother and like Marcus Smart and like Terry Rozier.
Those aren't shot creators.
But they can create their own shot. Like
and they're capable of. Do you want them to create their own shot?
I don't think you do. But part of the problem is like this whole team.
They want
this whole team. Like their identity, I think, is still like they still haven't figured out their identity even this far into the season. That like those guys are creating their own shot. Like the Morris brother, I forget which one it is. Like maybe Marcus or Marquise. I think it's Marcus, but I'm not sure. So I'm just saying the Morris brother. I get confused. But like he has sort of a tendency to like sort of take these like difficult shot mid range kind of things that are like
out of frustration.
Not even like out of frustration, like because they're better with him on the court, but just that like that's another guy who's like putting up kind of ISO kind of shots when this team has all this star power and shooters, and like they're just not like the whole way that the Warriors are able to move the ball around and get everybody involved because they have this identity that everybody has been able to buy into because they've had years and years to work it all out. I think the Celtics have just got way too many good players all at once and have yet to figure out how to actually work with it.
Celtics with Kyrie Irving versus Celtics... Okay, no. Celtics without Kyrie Irving versus Celtics with Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
Without 5-0 in the last five games. With 0-5 in the last five games. You see...
That changed last night.
Did that really?
They won. Or maybe
this,
2 nights
this
ago.
This is based off of 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So... Last five games without Kyrie Irving, 5-0, points per game 114, opponents' points per game 102.6, and then just like you see, there's 30 assists per game over the past five games. With Kyrie, you have 0-5. They're allowing 100, or they're scoring 110, and they're allowing 119 points per game, and they're only averaging like 25 assists per game.
Yeah.
The last five games with Kyrie Irving, There's just one more ball movement. Two, they play better defense. And three, they score more. That sounds like they're better without Kyrie Irving.
It does. But I think that, especially in the playoffs, Kyrie's going to be so important to everything this team does. Because the way that he... Like, how much they rely on him at times to just, like, win them a game...
That's true.
Is, like... Like it's like they rely on him very heavily at times to just, like, go out and drop 40 to win a game. Or go out... And then, like, you know, if everybody's focusing on Kyrie, then drop 10 assists, and that's how they, you know, that's how they win the game. And I think that, like, those defensive numbers, like, kind of show something that's, like, a little bit of a problem with Kyrie. Kyrie's not going to play the best defense, right? And maybe you're better when you've got, like, Marcus Smart coming in and starting because Marcus Smart's a better defender than Kyrie Irving. But I think that what Kyrie Irving is going to bring to this team offensively is very, very valuable, especially when they're able to figure out like how they really want to run their offense. Because right now, like I said, like, I think their identity is a little bit up in the air. And Brad Stevens is a great coach, so I think that he'll figure out eventually like what he wants these guys to do, and the players will figure out what Brad Stevens wants them to do. I think that once they figure that out, this team will be better with all of their players on the court. But for now, I think it does kind of make sense that they've got a little bit too much shot creating ability.
If the Celtics lose in the second round to the Bucks, Raptors, or 76ers,
mm-hmm.
is Kyrie Irving gone? I think so.
He might be gone either way. Like
might be gone either way.
Like even if they make it farther than that, like even
if they make it to the conference finals and lose,
I have no idea what's going on in Kyrie's head. But
a lot of things are going on in Kyrie's
head. He just seems so frustrated in general, and I think that maybe that even contributes to why they're better with Kyrie off the court, at least like according to those numbers that you just sent. But like Kyrie's not going to play well if I think. The Morris brother, but he said something like, "This is a group of individuals, not a team. They're not playing like a team right now, which is their biggest problem."
I feel like they're also, It's not like they don't want to win. It's not like they don't want to play.
No.
I feel like they really want to win. I remember I'm pretty sure it's Marcus Morris tweeted out.
I'm gonna lick this up.
Marcus Morris, three days ago, tweeted out, "Boston, don't worry, we're gonna figure this out."
Yeah, Marcus.
Boom, got it. Marcus Morris tweeted out, "Don't worry, Boston. We got this. We're going to figure this out."
Mm-hmm.
And that just, if I'm a Celtics fan, I'm really happy because I'm like, my players really care.
100%. Every player on this team wants to win. Every player in this team knows that this team can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe even farther. But they've got to figure out how to play as a team. And I think that with Kyrie Irving out there, sometimes, like, I know he's been critical of the young guys sometimes, like, blaming it on them. And his leadership has been in question. So especially if this team doesn't particularly like Kyrie Irving off the court, they're not going to play as well with him on the court.
That's true. I feel like Kyrie has proven, like he came to this team because he wanted to be the guy and he wanted to be the leader. And he was sick of LeBron being the leader. But has he actually proved that? And I would say it's a kind of a hard no.
Hard no. Okay. I think maybe... I think LeBron and Kyrie actually is so great next to each other because, like, while Kyrie Irving is a fantastic scorer and an offensive player, I think that he's a little bit, he's definitely a shoot first kind of point guard. And when he's your first option offensively, I think it's a little bit easy for the other players around him to get lost. Because I think he's a very good passer and playmaker. Well, but
scoring point guards are dominating the league right now. Steph Curry, Damian Lillard.
But my point is, if Kyrie Irving is your number one option and he's that scoring point guard, then it's going to be a little bit hard to get everybody else involved. And LeBron is one of the greatest passers and playmakers ever. So putting LeBron, sometimes bring the ball up the court and getting and being able to get everybody involved with cross-court one-hand passes while also having Kyrie next to him to put the ball in the basket whenever you need it.
Name one player that isn't going to be better if they're playing with LeBron James.
I'm saying that there's two skill sets match up well together, and that maybe even Kyrie needs a player like LeBron next to him that is a fantastic passer.
That's like a point forward?
Because...
Or maybe he's just been used to that for the past...
Yeah.
5 years.
I'm saying maybe part of the problem with the Celtics is that Kyrie is a score first, shoot first kind of guy. And when he's your number one option, like, he's probably not going to give Jason Tatum the ball as much as he could use it or something. You know, like, maybe the assist numbers aren't going to be as great as when he's off the court and you've got other players sort of just being pass first and, like, moving the ball around. Cool. All right. Let's talk about the one-and-done rule. Because this is sort of one of the biggest stories of this week was Zion Williamson just breaking his shoe apart. And one of the sort of, like, effects of that, I assume, I don't know, you know, not really, like, confirmed, I guess, but, like, a couple days later, basically, after the Zion Williamson thing, Adam Silver and the NBA put in a request to the NBA Players Association, which is led by Chris Paul, to end the one-and-done rule. So in case you didn't really hear, like, when Zion Williamson broke through his shoe, he hurt his knee, and sort of there was all this, like,
exploded.
Yeah, so not only did that clip go viral, but NBA players are tweeting at Zion saying, "You shouldn't play the rest of the season. College basketball is BS. You know, just save it for the NBA. Don't risk ruining your career by, like, playing on your knee or something." And basically, the idea is that, like, Zion Williamson right now could be in the NBA making millions of dollars. And next year he will be in the NBA making millions of dollars, probably going with the first overall pick this year in the draft.
Well,
but right now he's sitting in college while each of those Duke UNC game tickets are going for $3,000. Meanwhile, he's making 0 cents off of that. And he's risking getting injured and ruining his future NBA
career. We're an NBA podcast, so I kind of wanted to talk about how that affected the NBA.
Yeah, so all right, so that was just like a mini tangent.
Okay.
But like...
Well, first of all, I want to say how it affects the NBA. First of all, we're going to have the greatest draft class of all time next year.
You think the greatest draft class of all time?
Well, how could it not be?
Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan were in the same draft class.
No, I'm saying like... No, because we're going to have, like, the talent pool, like, assuming this goes through, because it very well could.
Mm. Oh, you mean that, like, Zion Williamson plus all the high school graduates?
Yes. Well, no, it's not going to be Zion Williamson, because it's not going to go through this year. I'm saying
you mean, like, next year.
You're going to have...
So all the graduating college freshmen plus all the best high school seniors are going to be together.
Yeah, and you're going to have the best draft class of all time. Wow. So if I'm a bad team, I'm grabbing everyone's first round picks right now. Just everybody.
I didn't even think about that, but that's crazy. Yeah.
I watched a video on Sporting Logically about it. He explained it pretty well.
All right.
Yeah, I really want like my team to get like a bunch of first round picks and then just draft all these guys who would be going lottery who are now going like 20th overall.
Okay, so but let's talk about like
that'd be amazing.
How smart is it to end the one and done rule?
I personally don't like it
because you don't like the one and done rule or ending the one and done rule?
I don't like ending the one and done rule.
Okay,
because I think the players should get paid,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's good for the NBA. Like as a league.
Why isn't it good for the NBA? Because
I would say
for like busts or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think first round picks. I don't want to say they become devalued, but I would say they just become so much more risky. Are you gonna have Are you gonna have like more picks?
Essentially, like
also it like kind of like ruins college basketball, which like
it's a lot harder to judge a player on how good they're gonna be in the NBA after their senior year in high school than after their freshman year in college.
Also, personally, as like a high schooler. Uh-huh. I think that I would be kind of more inclined to kind of just stack my team, and all of a sudden you're going to have like 20-something really good high schools in the United States, and they just all play each other. That's personally what I predict what would happen. Like Zion Williamson, like how could you judge that guy if he would just go to the draft right now? Because he was playing against like 5'8" white kids.
Here's the thing. The NBA, the one and done rule is looking to be changed now rather than 10 years ago, because right now 10 years ago it would have been that for the best players in high school basketball to play against each other, it would just be the McDonald's All American game, and like when Oak Hill played the other like top super teams in high school basketball.
Yeah.
You know, now there's AAU in. NBA scouts aren't even going to show up to high school basketball games. They're going to show up to AAU games. And so when the top AAU programs are going up against each other, that's what the NBA scouts are going to show up to. So it's just going to start being that the top 200 high school players in the country are all going to be fighting to get into the same AAU programs. The one problem with that AAU programs aren't always free. Like, it's not the same opportunity because...
I didn't even think about that, but I was saying, like...
Public high school is free. Playing at an AAU program is not necessarily free.
I think, like, just... I like play AAU, right?
Yeah.
I think that already, like, most of people in AAU dislike the fact that AAU has become so much more vamped up and professionalized. Because, one, it puts so much stress on the situation, and two, it just... AAU has become so toxic. This isn't even my opinion.
Yeah.
It's just guys I hear from like major like scouting programs. Like I went to a hoop group camp and they said AAU has become toxic.
Toxic because it's like the best players in the country are playing against each other, and all of a sudden as a high schooler you're being judged.
But then
like,
again,
how good your game is.
Yeah, and everyone just kind of wants to be that guy, and you have like 5-6 games a season, a weekend,
mm-hmm.
because that's what matters.
And instead
you
of playing,
you can wear yourself out for the high school season. And that doesn't matter as much.
Instead of playing as a team, everybody there is got to prove something about how good of a player they are.
Yeah, you know? So I think, one, it kind of dilutes college basketball.
It becomes an all-star game. It becomes an all-star game, especially if they change the one-and-done rule and everybody's trying to get on that AAU team that the NBA scouts are going to show up to. It becomes an all-star game.
And also, I think, going back to high school, I think you're going to have – I have this image of almost like college basketball becoming high school basketball, in that you have like a top 25 teams and not like a tournament – but just everyone's following this high school basketball circuit.
Yeah.
And you're going to have, like, you see, like, the top three or four programs play each other every year. Now you're going to have, like, the top 30, 40 programs play each other every year. And
yeah.
these kind of, like, manufacturing, like, D1 factories are going to become, like, so much bigger. And I don't necessarily think that's a good thing.
I think that rather than the actual high school's basketball teams or basketball games becoming more like valued, I think that the toxic AAU environment that you described would become just like more toxic and more competitive and more like hyped up, and all the problems that you think that you're starting, that you mentioned, that you're, and that people are starting to see with that, are just going to be exaggerated by the fact that there's just more pressure because you don't have the opportunity to prove yourself that in college. You're not proving yourself to college scouts. You're proving yourself to NBA scouts who are going to draft you and pay you millions of dollars, or
and you also
won't make the league.
You're also going to have more scouting on kids who are 15 years old, also leads to, one, wasted money, because like I have friends, and I've just heard about kids who just like were 6'4 in eighth grade and they were like known across the country, and now you just don't know who they are. Like, example one would be Julian Newman. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like, just even more examples of that. It doesn't really seem like there's going to be a lot of success with that.
Yeah.
Until you get to like senior year and you actually know what's up, or junior year rather.
I think that it makes sense for the NBA, because
you think it makes sense for the NBA?
For the NBA, because the NBA is going to start getting even younger players and even more talent, and just like,
I don't,
just
basically
more time and what I mean is like not more talent, it's the same players, but you're going to be getting more time. You just get an extra year of Zion Williamson. And everything is going to be pushed back.
How do you get an extra year of Zion Williamson?
Because instead of him playing in college and him drawing the eyes of the country in March Madness, he's going to be drawing the eyes of the country in the NBA Finals, or, you know.
Like the league gets an extra year. Oh, okay.
Yeah. The NBA, all that publicity and all that attention that Duke is getting right now because Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett is on the same team, people are going to be watching college basketball, or watching the NBA, or watching Zion and RJ in the NBA instead, is what I mean.
I mean, how many players get hyped up like Zion Williamson does?
Not very many.
So,
but that could change if you're a 15-year-old who's had mixtapes going viral, because all of a sudden there's more scouting in high school, and then you stay popular all the way until the NBA, and you've been hyped up now in our age of social media to the point that like you're an international superstar before you even hit the NBA.
That's a pretty good point. I would say though,
so that's why I think it's good for the NBA.
I would say though that I just think there's going to be so much more risk because again, they're going to be like 17-year-olds that the NBA is kind of investing their future into, like, especially like tanking teams. What if you just get the first overall pick and then you just draft a 17-year-old and you just was playing against bad competition.
That might not. It's going to create more busts and more risks. So it's not so great for like the bad front offices of the league. But I think for the NBA and from a just like a purely financial office.
I think anyone can make that mistake.
I'm not saying a bad front office. I'm saying it's bad for the front offices.
Oh, okay.
And you know, just
I think it's bad for the front offices.
It's bad for the front offices of bad teams, is what I'm saying. Like if you're a bad team and you're getting the first overall pick, it's bad for you. But like, from the NBA standpoint, and like from Adam Silver, who's just trying to like make the most money and get the most viewers as possible for the NBA, it's a good thing. But I think there's a very solid chance the NBA Players Association is going to reject it, because while NBA players have come out and said, college basketball is bad and, you know, whatever, this and that, those guys have been through that same toxic AAU thing that you described, and they will be able to recognize that, I think, more than And they will sympathize with that more than maybe some other.
Well, then again, these are kind of like the winners of the AAU program. These are the guys that got scholarships to Duke and UNC and Kentucky. Yeah,
fair enough.
So I don't really feel like they have the same kind of opinions on AAU.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the primary reason that they would object to it and reject the bill, if you want to call it that, would be that they want their job security. Because, first of all, you're going to have just a wave of young players, which is going to kind of just push out the old guys. And all of a sudden, the retiring age of the NBA might be...
younger?
Yeah, just like a year and a half younger, which I think that the Carlos Boozers of... no, sorry, like the Taj Gibsons of the league like wouldn't really want.
That makes sense.
And just the league itself gets younger, which I think like would help the playing style because it's more of run and gun, but I don't know. It seems, I think people could be scared because it's new. And that's a little bit what I feel.
Let's jump, like, based off of that, like, the old players retiring. This sort of feeds into sort of our last topic. We'll go through really quickly. Should Vince Carter and Dwayne Wade retire? Because...
yeah.
Yeah, that's an easy answer. But it's more just, like, a fun thing to think about. Because Vince Carter was playing sort of big minutes in, like, the four overtimes that happened last night. That which, by so the way, crazy. But so Vince Carter is playing big minutes for the Hawks on like this, you know, at the end of this like crazy game, which given the Hawks are not very good, but still Vince Carter was contributing. And Dwayne Wade is obviously still contributing to the Heat because he hit the game winner like two nights ago.
What a beast.
So maybe guys like Dwayne Wade and Vince Carter, who we have enjoyed watching them play for a decade and a half or whatever, but we pushed out a little bit sooner. But,
which is kind of...
it's a little bit sad.
Yeah, I don't know. But Vince Carter could dead-ass play in the league at 43 years old, which is kind of absurd. Is he the oldest player? Like,
I think Dirk might be.
No. Vince is older than him. Really? But I'm saying, who is the oldest player ever in the NBA?
Loki Manupal.
Yeah, look that up if you don't know what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, that does it.
Yeah. That was a pretty good episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of Space Floor NBA Podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Follow us on Instagram at Space the Floor Podcast and on Twitter at Space the Floor. And if you're listening on YouTube, subscribe and leave a like. That'd be appreciated. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review. And thank you for listening. My name is Connor Geelan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
And see you next time.
Peace.